Welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy, the podcast where we ask the question, what is it about horror that makes us happy? We ask it in a creepy way like that. Maybe put some background music with it one of these days. Twilight Zone. Your hosts are Steve Becker and my goofy-ass self, Chris Whitman. You can find out more about us at our website, horrormakesushappy.com. We got a link tree there for links to all the things, including today's guest and Steve and mine's solo project and all that. So you can just go on over there and check it out at horrormakesushappy.com.
Yes.
Before we get started, this is the trigger warning. This is a horror podcast. We talk about horror things, so we could delve into sensitive subjects. There may be foul language and or graphic content. Parental discretion advised. Maybe.
Yeah. If you're not prepared for that, why are you here?
Yeah, right? Like this is the fun show. We know why you're here.
Yes. Nice.
For fun. What do you think of it?
Yes. Today we're talking to Ms. Jen Wexler, a producer, director, writer, best known for her work with The Ranger, The Sacrifice Game, Most Beautiful Island, Depraved, and Darling. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Before we get into the meat of the interview, do you want to let us know what you're currently working on?
Sure. First of all, people can check out the two films I directed, The Ranger and The Sacrifice Game, which are both on Shudder. And I'm currently working on The Last Temptation of Becky, which is the third film in the Becky franchise.
Yes.
Cool. This is less about your body of work and more about your what you yourself have been a fan of, although the stuff that you've worked on may come up as well. That said, it's not meant to be a therapy session, so if there's anything that we ask that you don't want to answer, you just say pass and we'll move on. But starting with childhood, what were some of your earliest memories of scary things?
I've loved scary stuff since I was a very young child. I'll say in terms of media, when I was like 5 years old, I started watching Are You Afraid of the Dark? And that was really the gateway drug in terms of horror movies and TVs and horror stories. I was obsessed with Are You Afraid of the Dark? Favorite show as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Any particular episode stand out to you?
There was the one with the girl in the mirror. There was the one with the carnival and the skeleton guy. I have to say, and this is something that this is just kind of who I am and who I've been as a person. I don't like to go back and look at those things as an adult. Like I don't know the name of the episode and I don't even want to go look at it because I don't want my adult brain to tarnish the like beautiful memories I have of that.
Yes.
That are just like nightmares in my head. These just like glimpses and flashes.
Can relate. I made the mistake of going back and watching Thundercats one day and I'm like, this is awful.
Yeah. We've talked to many guests who are like, yeah, I showed my kid this thing that I loved as a kid. And they're just looking at me going, you liked this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe it holds up and maybe it doesn't, but I don't want to face the reality that maybe it doesn't.
Well,
Are You Afraid of the Dark? Was that the one that had an episode where someone like lost their face, I think?
I would not be surprised. I mean, there was also like Goosebumps at that time in the 90s. And like, there were a couple, there's like Eerie Indiana. So it might've been one of those, but yeah, it was a really magical, I don't know. It was a really magical TV show. And it made me, like I turned into the kid that liked to like hang out in graveyards after school. And like at sleepaway camp, I was the one who was like coming up with stories about the ghosts that lived in the woods. And then when I was like 10 years old, I saw The Craft and that turned into me making my friends like do seances during recess and then at sleepover parties being the one who was like, let's play light as a feather, stiff as a board. Yeah. I've been obsessed with all of this stuff as a kid. And probably I don't know, my friends, I think they might have thought of me as the spooky kid.
Every group has one.
That is something that we another question we like to ask, which is whether or not you had any friends or family who were friends of horror when you were a kid.
Not really. I would say that my mom definitely not. My mom was like very anti all of these movies and was like, why is my daughter so obsessed with these? Especially when I started like watching the like late 90s teen slashers like Scream. And I Know We Did Last Summer, which kind of coincided with me moving from kid years into early teenage years. My mom was like kind of horrified by my new obsession. My dad was really into, is and continues to be really into like action movies and like gangster movies and things like that. So he definitely was an influence in me wanting to watch more edgy stuff. But I think the horror of it all was my own discovery. And actually it really did affect my, you know, discovering my identity, like who am I? What are my tastes? It felt like, every horror fan feels this way. And I'm sure most people feel this way when looking back at that, like, you know, the 10 to 13 year old part of their lives. But like horror felt like it was like my secret thing, even though it was everybody, many people's things, but it was my secret thing. And it was like, I don't know, just kind of showing me, this adventure that existed, and it was scary, and it was like kind of like a way of learning up about the world in a safe way. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, that comes up quite a bit. Did you grow up in a small town or something like that, or because you mentioned it being your secret thing and not having any other friends who are into this, and that's usually pretty common if you live in an area where there you don't have a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think my friends were kind of into it, but I was the like obsessive one. I grew up in New Jersey, in like suburbia, New Jersey.
North Jersey, South Jersey?
North Jersey. If you know Parsippany, my childhood years were in Parsippany. And then when I was 12, my parents moved 20 minutes away, which is forever when you're a kid and you can't drive. Right. My parents moved to Rockaway. And this was like a life defining event for me. It was like a core wound for me. Like everything stems back to this move that happened when I was 12 years old, where I had this like very lovely, like my childhood felt very much like a Spielberg childhood, but the New Jersey suburbia version, where we're like, my friends and I are all biking around our neighborhood, and you know, and I kind of had the same friend group this whole time. And then 12 years old, 12 years old, we moved 20 minutes away, and then it's like everything changes, and then you're, you know, at the same time starting to go through puberty, and it's like a whole traumatic event that definitely shapes
just having to start over again.
I think it's funny hearing this, that like you hear 20 minutes away as an adult and you're like, oh yeah, it's 20 minutes, it's not that bad, but yeah, as a child, that's your entire world has changed.
Right. everything is different.
Yeah. And if it's 20-minute car ride, it's not the same as a 20-minute bike ride.
Oh, it's no. True. It was 20-minute car. Maybe 30 minutes. Like,
right. It was. Especially in that area of New Jersey, because there's a lot of hills. So I've moved around quite a bit, but I went to high school in Rutherford, just around the corner from Parsippany and Rockaway. Yeah. But having been in high school, I did ride a bike. I didn't actually even get my license until I was 21, because public transportation in that part of Jersey is actually really good. Or it was at the time. Yeah. But the hills in that area were pretty steep. So, you know, it, like I said, 20-minute car ride is, even on a flat ground, would be more by bike. But that area of the country, it's even more than that.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking like highway, like 20, 30 minutes on the highway.
Okay, we're in different different area codes now. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
More than that by back roads. And again, especially in that part of the area, the country, because the back roads and that part of the country are very twisty turny. Again, part of that's because of the landscape, but it also goes back to the fact that a lot of the roads back there predate the automobile. So a lot of the roads were horse tracks and wagon tracks. So you'd follow the hills to make it easier for the animals to be able to pull your cart, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's New Jersey is so funny because, you know, when people have like these ideas of what New Jersey is, and New Jersey is like 1,000 things. It's like, it's very urban, you know, in one area, and then it's super rural in other areas, and then it's very suburban in other areas. It's like, it's everything.
Do you live in that area now?
No, now I live in Brooklyn.
Oh, even worse.
I left New Jersey and I left it forever. Well, I visit. It's not that far. It's like, you know, my parents are still there, so I visit often. But
I was going to share a funny thing that, so I then after Jersey wound up moving to Florida, back to Florida, actually, I lived in Florida earlier too, and ended up dating a girl who I think was, I can't remember if it was Brooklyn or the Bronx. I want to say it was Brooklyn actually. And we flew back to go attend a wedding. Her best friend was getting married, but we flew into, I think we flew into Newark. And my dad was going to pick us up and we were going to go to dinner and then we were going to get a rental and then drive over to New York. And so stereotypical that I got off the airplane. And as soon as I got off the airplane, like I could smell the difference.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the nicest place. It's not the smelling place, Newark Airport.
There's pros and cons, you know, different areas, but yeah, completely forgotten about that. And when you're living in the area, like you don't notice it until you leave, and then you come back. And you're like, oh. maybe it was LaGuardia that we flew into, because I'm thinking there's a big landfill just on the other side of the bay. I can't think of what it's called right now. It's going to bug me.
Well, in Staten Island, isn't there like a giant landfill in Staten Island?
There might be one there as well. I'm thinking of one on the Jersey side.
Yeah. Staten Island is a giant landfill. No, just kidding.
All right, back to childhood. So are you afraid of the dark, the craft? Anything else stand out to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, like, you know, Scream, I Know You Did Last Summer, Urban Legend, like all the late 90s slasher movies became like my favorite thing in the world. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was foundational. The Faculty, Disturbing Behavior, like all these movies I was totally obsessed with.
Were these childhood for you, or would that have been in your teens?
That was childhood into teens. Border, like the 10 to 13 year old range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still childhood then. I think it's interesting. Like, there's definitely a style to all those 90s, early 2000s slasher movies. It's almost like a pop slasher. And it feels like there's a resurgence of that coming back right now.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
It's also funny because the ones that you mentioned, particularly Craft and The Scream, and I Know What You Did This Last Summer, I don't know how to describe it vocabulary-wise, but, like, all of them seem very Jersey to me. Like, I don't know how to describe that.
I mean, I would agree with that, but I'm coming from a very specific perspective. But right.
Yeah, I also agree. I don't know why, but I agree.
A lot of it has to do with the what's the word I'm looking for?
Aesthetic.
That actually was part of what I was going for. But yes, like the dress, the hair,
especially in that time, like very small town suburbia, like all those movies. You know, I mean. I Know We Did Last Summer is like a lake or beach community.
Down the shore.
The shore. We got the shore. I think where does I Know We Did Last Summer take place? I feel like it's
West. It was New England.
I think so. Yeah. Cause it's like cliff face roads and like big drops and seems like New England.
But certainly, I mean, if it all felt close enough that, you know, when you watch a movie, especially when you're a kid, you watch a movie and then it's like, you see elements of it in your real life. And so it takes on this bigger essence, this bigger feeling. And it feels like you're in the movie. Like I was doing a lot of that when I was a young teenager of like just walking through town, feeling like imagining I was in a movie in one of those movies specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Identification. Was there a particular scene of The Craft that stood out to you?
I mean, I love everything in The Craft. Yeah, I mean, The Craft from beginning to end is a masterpiece.
Yeah. I actually just recently finally got around to watching it, and they did a really good job of getting all the witchcraft accurately.
Here's one scene I think that affected me in a major way that I didn't even realize until I was an adult, which is I hate bugs. I hate bugs so much. I have this physical, instinctive aversion to them. It's like goes beyond just heady fear into something like bodily. And even yesterday I saw a bug in the, like, it was like 7 a.m. and I saw like a centipede and I screamed and my husband woke up and was like, what is happening? What is going on? And he had to take care of the bug. But, which by the way, we put out the window. We didn't kill it, but
oh, that's good.
And I, when I say we, I mean he. I did. I was
you supervised
the royal we. Yeah.
Yes, the royal we.
But I was like, what? What is my problem? Why do I have such this reaction? And I think it goes back to seeing The Craft when I was like 10 years old, and the bug and snake scene where she's walking through the house and it's just like bugs and snakes are everywhere in the house. Like, I think that hit me on some very deep level and changed my brain chemistry to make me like very afraid of these creatures.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Can also relate to, again, going back to Jersey, I've shared this on the podcast actually a few times that after I graduated high school and got out of the house, I lived on my own for a while. And, you know, only having a high school diploma, didn't have much money, didn't even have a license. I had to live places that were along this bus route to and from my job. And so I ended up living in Passaic with a coworker. And it was in a building that was at the back of, on the first floor, it had a soul food store. And then we were the apartment right behind that. And then there were three or four stories above that. And the landlord did not do a good job of pest control, shall we say? And so the place was constantly filled with roaches to the point that like you'd come home from work and you'd flick the light on. And like in movies, like they'll show a scene where you flick the light on and the roaches scatter. These didn't even scatter. They're just like, hey, what's up, dude? It's just like, ugh.
Awful. They're like at home.
And so now like
that was work.
Yeah. To this day, if I see a dark spot on a counter or a floor, I have to look at it to make sure it's not a bug. And it drives me nuts because, you know, there are certain places where like there's a notch in my countertop, or like when I was living in Florida, there was a scratch in the linoleum. And like, I know that's not a bug, but I still got to look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. particular scene of maybe Scream that stood out to you?
The opening scene of, I mean, the first Scream with Drew Barrymore in Scream is so iconic. And as a kid watching it was so horrifying. And the saddest part is, that like her parents are right there. She's like hung up from a tree and she's like, it's so horrible, especially when you're young watching it, or when you're not used to watching horror movies. Like, you know, I am now. So it's now I'm like, it's not that bad, but like, but her parents are right there. And that's the really, I think that's a really like tragic, sad, emotional moment of that. Plus the fact that like, you don't think Drew Barrymore is going to die because she's Drew Barrymore. And then surprise, right, she is the first one killed, which obviously was the point of all that. I'll say same thing though. In I Know You Did Last Summer, one of my favorite scenes in that is the parade sequence, which might be one of the best horror movie sequences in history, in my opinion, where Sarah Michelle Gellar playing Helen Shivers is like running away from the killer and the parade is going on right nearby. And she's so close to people, but they can't hear her screaming. And when you have that kind of like emotional little element too, to a kill scene, it's like, damn. Also, I'll add, while we're talking about some of my favorite scenes from late 90s slasher movies, Urban Legend, the opening of Urban Legend with Total Eclipse of the Heart playing, and our character is like driving and she stops at a gas station and the gas station attendant is trying to tell her, you know, she gets freaked out by the gas station attendant. She gets back into her car and runs away and driving away. And then the gas station attendant is like, there's someone in the back of your car screaming after her, but she doesn't hear. And then, you know, well, she gets beheaded. Anyway, these scenes are so good. And that's really good because that's like two, Total Eclipse of the Heart is playing throughout the scene. So these are some of my favorite scenes in these films.
You gotta love like really iconic horror movie or slasher scenes like that, where they just, they also add a needle drop with a great song.
Oh yeah. So good.
I was thinking for a second that almost lines up with like a, I don't want to call it a fear or phobia, but like something that bothers me. But now that I'm thinking about it more, maybe it's not so much that.
I think it's the idea that there's safety that's so close.
Right.
And that it that really shakes you, especially when you're watching that when you're young, because, you know, you're, well, I came from the world of suburbia with like very overprotective parents and like this sense of safety. And so those scenes really were like, oh my God, you're not safe. Actually, your parents are right there, but they're not close enough to get to you before you're killed. Like they can really shake that sense. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We said you didn't have anybody in your family who were fans of horror. Did you participate in Halloween as a kid?
Oh yeah, totally.
Favorite costume? Least favorite costume?
Favorite costume as ever or just as a child?
As a kid.
As a kid, this is not a scary costume, but when I was like five, I was Belle from Beauty and the Beast. And I was very proud of that costume. I don't know why I felt like in that costume. I was a witch another year. I was like a mime another year. But yeah, being Belle for some reason was like hit at a moment where I felt very like proud and cool.
It's a very elaborate costume.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oh, I'll say my favorite, jumping out of childhood for a second, my favorite costume of all time was when my friend and I were the morning after when we were in college, which meant we wore like men's button down shirts and very short shorts and heels and like fucked up our hair and messed up our makeup. And I had a condom in my hair. That was my favorite costume for a while.
Were you carrying the heels in your hand, like Walk of Shame?
You know, we were in Philadelphia, so we would have like stepped on glass and.
Oh, yeah, good point. That's not a place.
You know, have something horrible happen. So we were not, but that was the vibe of the. Oh, and smoking cigarette. We had cigarettes, obviously, too.
Mm. Of course.
Reminds me of what was it? Was it from Beetlejuice? Like in the afterlife, wasn't there somebody who was, it was something like that. Maybe I think I'm mixing it up with something else.
Yeah, there were a couple of people on the waiting couch in the afterlife in Beetlejuice. One of them.
Yeah, we would have been we would have been perfect in that scene.
It reminds me of 22 Jump Street where Channing Tatum was doing the Walk of Shame in solidarity. He even held the shoes.
Oh, one of the questions.
One of those two.
One of the questions I forgot I wanted to ask was something that a lot of our guests have reported is that there's a dividing line where prior to this line, they were actually afraid of horror. But then after this dividing line, they started to enjoy it. Was there a dividing line like that for you or was it always enjoyable?
I think it was all there was always an adrenaline rush that came with it that was enjoyable. I'll say the one time it was not enjoyable as a child was I was probably 7 years old and I walked into a room. I was at some family reunion and event. I walked into a room where a bunch of people were watching The Shining and on the screen was the scene of the two twin girls and Danny on his tricycle watching them. And, you know, one minute they're standing there, the next minute their bodies are all bloody in the hallway. And I walked in and I saw that and I walked right back out and I was like, I was like, whatever that is, I remember having the thought. I was like, whatever that is, I never want to see it again. And now, of course, it's like my favorite movie of all time. And I've seen it.
I'm picturing that Simpsons meme of the grandfather walking in. He's already in the circle, picking up and walks back out.
Yep. And in the age of the internet, I think of the gif of the little kid wandering into a room, then making the nope face and immediately running back out. Yeah. It's like,
nope.
How old were you when you saw this?
Seven.
Like seven.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an appropriate reaction for seven and saying, oh, his little girl's chopped up with an axe. I'm going to go.
Right. Not for me.
So that was straight up fear and horror that I experienced in that moment. But that's really like every other time, especially when I was watching the full narrative of it, like the full story of it. It was always
when you have all the context.
Yeah, it was always met with it was like adrenaline, but it was like a roller coaster. It was like I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna, you know, have fun doing it, and this being scared is part of the fun.
Did you have any really scary dreams when you were a kid or reoccurring nightmares?
Not that like I know I did, but not ones that like stood out that I can remember. I'll say one time I went through some experience where I was wandering around my house in the middle of the night. As probably I was like five or six. And I don't know. That was like, that was the one like very liminal, I'm moving through my house, but my house isn't really my house. Anyway, my mom like turned on the lights and found me downstairs in like the middle of the night and was like, what are you doing? And then I woke up. I think I was in this like half awake, half sleep place. Yeah, sleepwalking. But it wasn't a regular thing. It was like really this one time.
All right. Was there anything in childhood in real life that scared you? No is a good answer.
That was a healthy answer.
There were things. I was like very fearless. Like I wanted adventure. Like I would walk to school too. And you had to walk through like a path. And as a very young kid, like my parents would obviously walk me. But then there was like a time, I remember it was a storm. And I convinced my friend, we were supposed to meet my mom to pick us up by car. You could, you know, be picked up by car too on the other side of the school. And I didn't go to where I was supposed to meet my mom. And I convinced my friend that we should just like venture through the storm together and walk back home that way. And my mom freaked out and was like, where are you? Right. Like, and obviously this is pre-cell phone. And I'm like 5 and it's a fucking raging storm. And we're walking through the woods and like in a path.
You're like, it's fine.
Yeah. But for me, I was like, this is so fun. We're on an adventure. Hey. Like, yeah. So I got yelled at way later, but in the moment, it was really fun.
Sounds fun to me.
Scared the shit out of me, kid. Was there ever a time in your childhood when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
I think I had a very calm, safe childhood, which made me want to go on adventures.
Yeah. So the next two questions we're going to ask, they're going to be a pair. We're going to start with the negative one so we can end on the positive one. Do you remember the first person you hurt?
Whoa. Okay. First person I hurt. Oh, man. No.
Okay.
But
okay.
I would say it probably was my little brother.
Yeah. Siblings brother, are usually the answer, yes.
Yeah.
My brother's 4 years younger than me. Or okay. About... for a little less than 4.
Like 3.5. Same with me and my sister.
Yeah. So I don't remember what it was that I did to him, but I'm sure there was something evil and horrible I did.
I do remember fingernails in the arm. That was always me.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And I do remember specifically, this is not the first thing I did, but at some, I think maybe I was 7 or 8 and he was like 4 or 5. And I told him, I was like, you don't want to get grounded by our parents. You don't want to get grounded. And he didn't know what being grounded was. And I made up this story that like being grounded means they're going to bury you in the ground.
Oh, no. Oh nice. Nice.
That's kind of awesome.
I was that kind of older sister.
I'd love that if I ever had you told me.
Oh god. So flipping that,
what's grounded? Oh, they put you in the ground,
right?
Yeah. So it sounds like,
yeah,
tombstone and everything. So flipping that question around, do you remember the first person you helped?
The first person I helped, no.
Probably rephrase the question to be, who's the first person you remember helping?
Ooh, there you go.
First person I remember helping. I don't know. Maybe I helped my brother too.
Yeah, that's also common. Yes.
I'm sure I did some nice things too at this time.
Yeah. You gotta counter, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not every question is going to land. You just never know until you ask.
Yeah. It probably had to do with my younger brother, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. I think one of our most interesting answers to that question still so far has been my mother is for the first person I hurt because childbirth hurts.
Well, that's a good answer.
Well, it's more specific than that. You can tell her the rest of it.
was it, wait, you talking about me or?
Yes. You said that apparently you broke her tailbone.
I did.
Oh my God.
And she says I've been a pain in the ass ever since.
Oh, that's good. That's a good line. Like at least she gets that line from
right there you go. You're welcome. I gave you a joke.
Yeah, that you can hold over my head forever.
I was born of a C-section, so like Damn. They've had to like cut my mom open. So there's that. That hurt. Yeah.
Fortunately, they have gotten better at that over the years.
Yeah.
It used to be a very risky behavior.
Yeah, it did.
Yep.
And now a 10-second self-advertising spot. Every Sunday night, I live stream drawing my horror-themed webcomic on our Discord server. If you want to come hang out and watch me draw, there's an invite link on the front page of horrormakesushappy.com. Back to the show.
All right, so that's the childhood section. For teenage years, we already covered some of the movies. Is there any other media that you want to put down for the teenage section that we haven't already talked about?
Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, watching like Scream, for instance, Scream is a movie that's constantly referencing older movies. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was kind of like a book or like a list of like, okay, well, here are obviously the movies you need to check out. I mean, they mentioned Halloween, they mentioned Friday the 13th. Like, so my teenage years became, I'm going to go and try to watch all of these movies that I can, that I believe influenced the ones I'm now obsessed with. Yeah. Which really became like a lifelong venture.
Doing your homework.
I'm still doing, yeah. I'll say I was a favorite from when I was like in the 13 to 16 range was like Donnie Darko. When I remember being 15, my friends and I were like obsessed with Donnie Darko, watching it over and over. And then I was really into movies like Requiem for a Dream and like Vanilla Sky, like these movies that were like, we're just going to blast open your mind. Fight Club, like we're just going to blast open your mind and it's not what you thought. But that's a very, I feel like that's a very like 2000, early 2000s kind of movie. So I was a good audience for that.
Trivia question, if I can remember this correctly. I remember reading about this later. I had no idea, but apparently Frank the Bunny is actually a person that shows up elsewhere in the movie. Do you know who that is?
Well,
yeah. Didn't know that.
If I remember correctly, I believe it's his sister's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, I haven't actually watched it again since I was 15. I would say there was like 6 month period where we watched it obsessively, and then I haven't watched it since.
Right. Yeah. I loved it, but it had no recollection of it actually being related to any other character in the movie. I just thought it was some weird fucking thing that showed up out of nowhere.
No, it's, if I recall correctly, he was, yeah, Donnie's older sister's boyfriend. And in the end of the movie with the party, he was driving the car that ran over Gretchen.
I don't remember that, but all I know is that apparently his name was also Frank. Mm-hmm. So Makes sense.
Yeah.
Any particular scene that did stand out to you that you do remember from the movie?
Yeah, the plane, like the whole thing with the, I don't really remember it. And I don't remember how everything makes sense at the end, but the engine falling and, oh, this is like a movie about time travel or something. Anyway, that was a very effective image, I'll say.
Okay. For me, it was Sparkle Motion.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Horrible. What about Requiem for a Dream? I know there's the one scene that everybody references the most, but is that the one that stands out to you for you the most, or is there a different one?
I would say the whole movie, obviously. Yeah. But I think just that each of their characters has this like really crazy spiral of a journey. And that is what, so I, you know, again, while I haven't watched it since I was a teenager, my memory of it is just the flashes of like different moments of each of their journeys. And like, obviously the scene with, Jennifer Carpenter but also the Jared Leto, like, you know, his whole heroin, all those close-ups on his arm and the mother character with her pills and all the stuff. I mean, it's just a cacophony of nightmarish imagery.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. It's a symphony of
pain,
discomfort.
Well, that too, yes.
Yeah, and so
to watch
at the same time.
Yeah, Darren Aronofsky is an artist.
Yes,
for sure.
What's that phrase ring a bell? Symphony of Pain.
Something from Hellraiser.
Maybe. For some reason, that popped to mind. What about Vanilla Sky?
Oh my god, I love Vanilla Sky. I made my husband watch it recently because he had never seen it, and I'm like, no, it holds up. It's still good. I would say.
I was just about to tease you. Ooh, you broke your rule.
I know, but it does hold up, and I continue to love it. The scene in the beginning where he's running through empty Times Square is so amazing.
Yeah. Imagine that was not easy to do or cheap.
Yeah. Just, I mean, that was pre 9/11. I think they shot that pre 9/11. So maybe it was a different time to make
the old sky that old.
I think so. I'm pretty sure. Double check me on that.
Feels about right.
I mean, Vanilla Sky is amazing. And I think one of the things that I really love, I love it so much in so many ways. I love Cameron Diaz, her car scene. I love Penelope Cruz, all of those scenes. I love the editing in it. But there's real, what I really like is like some of these needle drop hits, like the way the music hits is in various moments of the movie is just like so good and so energizing. And it really like, it does something to your brain where it just like puts you right back to when you were first watching it. You know, it feels so good when a movie does that effectively, like going back to Urban Legend too, with Total Eclipse of the Heart. Like when a movie does that effectively, it's like the best. Mm-mm-mm. And just Tom Cruise running around being like, having a meltdown. It's like so fun to watch.
Working in IT, my favorite part is when he screams to this guy, tech support!
Yeah. So good.
Ba-doom-pish. Let's see. Jumping around on my document here. Any scary dreams or reoccurring nightmares as a teen?
No, I don't think so. Okay.
Was there ever a time in your teens when you're terrified of something in real life?
No.
Okay.
I would say, I mean, yes, in the sense of post 9/11, I think we all felt a collective trauma.
Right.
And that was very shattering just in terms of like, you know, the idea of safety and the feeling of, oh no, what you thought what felt like safety is not actually real. And, you know, I was in high school in New Jersey. So while I wasn't in New York, and I didn't know anybody personally affected by it at the time, it was still like, that's not that far away. Like I've been there, I've been to the Twin Towers. And then I will say that it did for years after, every time I went to New York and I was like in a tunnel going to New York, I would have these like, it was major anxiety about like terrorist attacks and stuff. So like it really affected me in that way, as it did to many, many, many people, obviously, and to some people way more extreme than it did me. But I will say that that was the thing that, you know, that was the fear of the time. And that was what was our media and our political systems were pushing those fears at us. And as, you know, a teenager, I bought into some of those anxieties.
As did a lot of people. I was living in Florida at that point, and that freaked me out as well. I had my father worked for a company that had offices in the Twin Towers and sometimes would go into those offices. And of course, when this all happened, you couldn't get a phone call through to anybody because all the lines were tied up. So it was hours until I found out whether or not my dad had been there, and fortunately had not. But the girl that I was dating, she had lost at least one person in the towers, but it might have been more than that. Not a fun time, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Flipping that question around, was there a time in your teens when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
Yeah, I would say that my teenage years were more about feeling bored. I was bored, and I was like, I think depressed because I was in this like town where, you know, I made new friends and whatever, but it wasn't as magical, you know, as
right
when I was a kid, and I felt like I was bored and angry. And anyway, so then this came, the way I dealt with all these feelings was watching a lot of horror movies. And also I started going to punk shows, and that became like a sense of adventure for me. And it was like kind of outside the monotony of like day to day going to school, feeling like I didn't belong, feeling bored. I lived right near the Rockaway Mall, if that's you guys know that mall, and started working at the Journeys shoe store, which is like the cool shoe store, and started working with all these like older people, you know, people in their late teens and early 20s who were in the punk scene, and they started bringing me to different punk shows. And I like went to, I was like 16 years old going to like Philadelphia with them to see shows, or like Rhode Island. Like I started going on all these little road trip wow. adventures and hanging out with these different people. So that really ignited my teen years.
Did your parents know you were going that far for these shows?
So weird, right? I look back and I was like, how did they let me do that? I don't remember.
Yeah, mine wouldn't have.
Yeah, I should ask you, why did you let me like stay overnight in this place? And I guess I said, I'm going with my boss from work. And then they were like, okay. They, by the way, my parents.
It's also problematic.
This is fine. No, she's with an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. My parents like to listen to some of the podcasts I do, so they might listen to this.
Hi, mom and dad.
Yeah, I mean, I was like 16 and she was 25, and she was like, you know, oh, it's the manager from the store is taking me to this place. But I don't know. It changed my life in ways. It like made life fun and exciting. Good. So
good.
And now a 10-second self-advertising spot. If you like horror-themed webcomics, cannibalism, or necromancy, you can check out my webcomic at piecesofflesh.com. Now back to the show.
Rolling into adulthood, favorite books, movies, stories that stand out to you now in adult years?
So I'll just say, like, I kind of categorize teenhood, well, I guess most people do, like 18. Now I'm going to college. I went to school in Philadelphia. So this is now different in my mind, like different portion of my life. And yeah, I mean, I went to art school in Philadelphia, so definitely started learning more about like the history of film in general in that time. And then from there, while I was a senior in college, I started interning at a place called FearNet, which is a horror TV channel. And when I graduated from college, they actually were moving from Philadelphia to California, and then I like kind of followed them. I moved to Los Angeles too, and then they gave me my first like real job, which was a marketing coordinator for FearNet, which was kind of like, FearNet was like, is like kind of like what Shudder is now, but before there were streaming channels, it was a linear channel and website. Yeah, so that was really. Working at FearNet kind of introduced me to like the horror industry, to horror movies as an industry. Mm-hmm. And then that being around like horror journalists and just like going to events to support the network at these events really started to just expand my knowledge and also palette in terms of the horror genre. So
I bet that was fun going from just being a fan of the stuff to holy shit.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like truly like the coolest. Like I look back on it and I was like, what a cool opportunity that was. And then how cool that turned into like, what a cool first job that was. Like getting to go to film festivals. Like I went to Fantastic Fest. I went to Comic-Con. I went to like a tattoo convention, like being, you know, I'd be standing at the FearNet booth trying to get more subscribers, but the whole experience of getting to meet people in this space, like other horror fans, getting to meet horror filmmakers. It was through this that I met a filmmaker named Drew Daywalt, who was making all these very cool short, like horror shorts, and getting a lot of notice for his horror shorts. I became friendly with him. And then he was so supportive of me when I was like, I want to direct a horror short. He ended up producing my first short. That was very life changing and like mind changing. Cause it was like, oh, I can like make these things myself. Like I'm a fan of these things and now I can make these things. And I guess I needed at that time in my early 20s, like someone to kind of give me that permission to be like, yeah, this is how you do it. You just, you know, I'll produce your, it was like a 3-minute short. It was called Slumber Party. It was very like easy. I look back and I'm like, oh, that was so easy to shoot. We shot in a couple hours on one day or whatever. But it was so like affirming for me that like, this is a thing I want to do. I've wanted to do for quite some time. I wanted to be a filmmaker since I really realized that people make these things that I love are being made by people. Mm. And, but that was the like moment where it switched from I'm a fan of this to I can make
a creator. It. Yeah. Cool. So those are a bunch of experiences. Any particular books or movies or stories though that stand out to you?
Let me think for a moment. Well, I guess I saw movies at this time like Suspiria, which has become a favorite. I think this is when I started watching The Shining on repeat. Let me look at my Letterboxd favorites.
There you go.
Well, while you're doing that, what did you like about Suspiria?
Suspiria is just like, I love the world of Suspiria. I love the concept of Suspiria. I like that it's a witchy, fairy tale-esque ballet school. And I'm always a fan of, because I was the new girl when I was a kid, I'm always a fan of like the new girl comes to a place and then has to learn how the place works. And even better when it's a horror thing and then they have to like become the detective who's figuring out like who's killing the other students. That narrative is very appealing to me. And then, I mean, Suspiria is just so beautiful, and the atmosphere of it, the music, obviously, Goblin, Jessica Harper is just what an awesome final girl. And I really like the, you know, I like how it plays with the fairy tale, the tropes of fairy tales with the older women who run the school being witches and wanting to take the power from the younger female students. I think there's a lot of layers there that are really fun to explore and think about. And
yeah, I always looked at it as like a culty witch aspect, but you're right. It does have kind of a Grimm's fairy tale vibe to it with the older witches stealing the life essence from the younger girl.
Yeah. And I think he was inspired by, Argento was inspired by like Snow White for it and wanted to use like children. I've read that he wanted to use children in as the actors, and his producers were like, no, they need to be older. But then they made the furniture like, or the set, the production design, like they made it everything very big so that the characters would feel small and feel like they're in this like big fairy tale world.
What'd you like about The Shining now as an adult?
Right. Now as an adult.
Yeah, right.
The Shining is just one of those movies, as with as many people feel about it, I can watch over and over and over again and never get bored of. And the atmosphere and everything just like pulls me in every time. All of the performances. Last year I read a 900-page book about the making of The Shining that was released by Taschen. And the book was awesome because it felt like you're like part of the crew making The Shining with them. It's like shooting day, you know, 24, here's what was shot this day. And it like goes into all the dynamics of everybody on the crew and the cast. And it gave a sense of what Kubrick knew about the story and when he knew it. Like he didn't always know the ending of the third act of how he was going to end it. Like that didn't come for quite a long time into shooting before he came up with that. Even the hedge maze like didn't come up, wasn't an idea until they were deep into shooting. It talks about how there was like a fire on the set and the you know, like the main lobby set burned down, but they were almost finished shooting, but it made them have to get a few shots in a few different ways than they had planned in that space. So as a filmmaker and as a fan of The Shining, like this, really this 900-page book was such a joy to read.
Sounds like.
So this comes up often in a lot of our calls, especially once we get to the adult section and you start moving from being a fan into being the auteur, but it sounds like everything that you're describing here is on the auteur side. Is there any part of The Shining that hits you on more of an instinctual gut level?
I think the whole thing hits me on an instinctual gut level, which is why I've wanted to like tr- try to understand it.
Mm. Okay. As you were describing this book, I started chuckling to myself because it didn't go in the direction I thought it was going to go in, but it would be really amusing if somebody were to write a book about, you know, being, you know, part of the crew of The Shining, and then the story ends up like devolving into a surreal experience in itself. That, yeah. That could be a fun little experiment.
Yeah.
Any other book stories or movies stand out to you?
I mean, in film schools, when I like saw 8½ for the first time, which became another movie I became obsessed with. And then to skip ahead, like only recently, a couple years ago, I saw All That Jazz for the first time. So filmmakers, movies about filmmakers who are like, or not in All That Jazz, he's a filmmaker, but he's also doing a play on Broadway at the same time. But movies about artists starting to go crazy are definitely appealing to me.
I'm looking up 8½ because it doesn't ring a bell. The two that
Bellini,
are
classic.
Oh,
neither of those are showing up on IMDb.
Might be older than IMDb.
Maybe it's
Fellini.
I mean, it's definitely on IMDb. Look up Fellini's 8½, like number 8 and then 1/2.
Yeah, I did that too. And there's a movie about an 8½-year-old director.
That's so not real. It's not coming up for you?
On this is 1963.
Yeah, it's from 1963. Yeah,
okay. Yep. Federico Fellini. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, check it out. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah. Okay. And what'd you like about it? Sorry, I apologize if I'm making you repeat yourself. I was looking it up maybe while you were talking about it.
I mean, it's just a movie that I became completely obsessed with and watched many times. And I mean, these movies, I would say The Shining, 8½, All That Jazz, like these movies are all consuming, and they're entire worlds of themselves. So I don't want to even break them into pieces and say I like this and like that. It's like they create their dreams. They create their entire universes unto themselves. And the best way to experience it is just to step into the world of it.
Okay.
You know what? Looking at some of the stills of this movie and looking at your films like Ranger and... Actually, what was the other one? Damn it.
The Sacrifice Game?
Yes, The Sacrifice Game earlier. I love your eye for detail and the color palettes in your films. So
oh my God, thank
if you. If you say that 8½ is just an all-encompassing, like, draws you in film, I trust your judgment. And
you just have to see it. You just have to watch it. It's just amazing on every level. Like, I'm not doing it justice by just awing about it. It's just, but it's an experience. But yeah, I would say like that, what you just said is just the biggest compliment. So I can't even take that compliment, but like, I will say that there are movies you watch that get deep into your soul and your psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hope that maybe there's some influence that appears in your own work, but I would never, I've done nothing in the atmosphere of these films, like in the.
That you know, well,
maybe these are like the best films ever made, in my opinion. Like, okay. They're incredible. But thank you at the same time.
You can still work towards it.
I will say that I can see in Sacrifice Game, which is about, it's a demonic boarding school movie. It's a group of girls are at their boarding school over Christmas, and then a gang that's obsessed with this occult ritual comes to the boarding school to do this ritual. And it is like, it's a location where it's like there's nothing else around. It's just this school surrounded by woods, and it's just this like group of characters stuck in the school during a snowstorm, and there's like an axe involved at one point, and there's like elements that I'm like, oh yeah, obviously that's a Shining, that was influenced by The Shining, that was influenced by The Shining. But like, I can see the little traces of just because I love The Shining so much, like I can see how that came through. But I mean, The Shining is just so amazing.
In Tampa Bay, in St. Petersburg, there's a a museum, a Salvador Dali museum, which is interesting because it actually kind of relates to two different things here in this point of the conversation. When you're talking about 8.5 being an entire universe unto itself, it started making me think about what I've read about Unchin and Dilu.
Unchin and Dilu.
I haven't seen it, but I've read enough about it that it made me.
Oh, you should watch it. It's so good.
I've heard it's interesting. So that was one connection. But the other connection is that I've been to this museum, and it's really interesting because they've got a lot of stuff from his entire life and even like little sketches and things that he would had been doing his entire life. And they show elements that end up you see them in some of his most famous paintings, but yet they're recurring throughout his work for decades, even before they get to the most famous work. And when I saw this, it really kind of nailed it for me that a lot of creators, in his case, he was a painter and a sculptor, but a lot of creators, they have certain ideas that they wrestle with sometimes their entire life. And to relate it to something that's happened in my own life, when I was going through counseling and 12-step work and stuff like that, I, for a while, was writing a journal every day to work out, whatever it is that I felt I wanted to work on that particular day. And I discovered accidentally that what I would do is I would write sort of flow of consciousness style. Yes. And when I was going back and rereading what I was writing, I discovered that I was saying the same thing sometimes multiple times, like 5 or 6 different times. I'd be saying the same thing, but using slightly different wording until I found the exact right way that I wanted to say what it was I was trying to say. And then I could move on from that topic onto a different topic.
Love it. Yes.
And amazing. And so what I'm hearing about, the compliment that Chris gave you, and you're saying, I'm not up to that level. What I'm thinking to myself is you may get to a point where you look back on your career and you see these different elements that, you are gradually improving until you get to that level kind of thing.
Well, that's the dream. That's the hope. That's like what my whole, look, you talk about journaling. I've been journaling every day for 15 years. Hmm. I love journaling. So when you're talking about journaling, I'm like, yes, yes. Talk more about that. Like, it's my favorite thing. I think it's so healthy and good as soon as I wake up in the morning, I wake up, I drink coffee, I journal. I get all the whatever's going around inside my brain. I just put it all onto the page. I do like freestyle writing. I don't edit myself. And the reason why I started doing this, by the way, when I was in my mid-20s, this is when, I was I wanted to be a filmmaker, but I worked in marketing, and I wanted to be a writer, but I couldn't write. I had such a block. And I took this class called Answering the Muse, and the teacher taught us all about journaling and free writing, and it became just my favorite thing from there. And it really has unlocked everything for me in terms of creativity. Like anytime I'm stuck, it's like, let's just free write it out and let's just see what comes out of our subconscious and onto the page. And it's just the most amazing thing. So I'm so on board with what you're talking about. And yeah.
Cool. Yeah. My own take on it is that there have been a lot of things that have happened in my life that, and not just mine, but I think it happens to a lot of people, where if you don't have the proper vocabulary to discuss a particular topic, there can be a lot of frustration because you end up trying to say something, but you can't find the right ways to say it. And then the other person isn't necessarily understanding what you're trying to say. And that, if the other person's in the same boat, maybe they're trying to explain something and they're not finding the right words, it can cause this huge mess. And there have been times where it's kind of weird. Like on one level, I can be very quick about things, but then there are other things that I'll be taking a shower thinking about something that happened 6 years ago. And all of a sudden the pieces fall into place. And I'm like, holy shit, that's what happened. And I didn't even I didn't have the words to describe it because I wasn't thinking about it in that particular manner.
Yeah.
And it's just really useful, at least to me, sometimes to do this journaling thing where, like I say, I spill it out a number of different ways until I find the right words to say what it is that I'm trying to say. And then I can finally move on from it because now I know how to say what it was that I've been trying to say this whole
time. Yeah. Sometimes you just like need the words. You need to like name the thing.
Mm-hmm. I love that, that aspect of it too. Like being in the shower several days or years later, just like, fuck, that was it.
Yeah.
We've definitely all had those moments.
Yeah. Well, I think that like journaling, like being in the shower, like being around flowing water, mm-hmm. It's like another layer of your consciousness can think. Same thing with like doing dishes. I find like doing dishes or taking a shower or journaling or whatever, like it's like getting into the flow state where there's a underlying the portion that thinks too much. That's like editing.
Getting out of your own way.
Totally. Like that part quiets down.
Yeah. Going back to some of our questions here. Any scary dreams or recurring nightmares as an adult?
I'll say that I have had a couple moments of like the classic experiences of feeling like there's something on you. Hmm. I don't know. This is something like I think happens to a lot of people sometimes. Like I've felt like a creature on like my back when I've been sleeping from time to time. And I think it like from seeing there was a movie. Have you guys seen this doc? The Nightmare, I think it's called. It came out maybe 8 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. I think this is something. I think it's called The Nightmare. I think this is something that a lot of people experience. Also, like shadowy figures standing over them in bed. Like I haven't really had that many of those, but I have had the experience of feeling that there's like something on me and being in kind of
back to your bug thing, doesn't it?
Maybe it goes back to the bug thing, but like feeling like I'm stuck and I'm in this mid awake slash sleep state. So that's pretty horrifying and scary, but it hasn't happened sleep that many paralysis. Times. Yeah. It's only happened a couple of times and but it's, you know, you remember it when it happens.
Yeah. It happened to me quite a bit in my early 20s and freaked me out quite a bit. I've shared this on the podcast before too, that I didn't know what sleep paralysis was at the time. And I didn't find out for like another 10, 15, 20 years after that. And I was raised by my grandmother, who was very religious. I'm more atheist agnostic. But like when I had this experience, like the first time or two, it scares you. But after like 15 of them, you start going, what the fuck? Like there's no other explanation for it. And now I'm starting to wonder, are there spirits? Is there something, you know, keeping me from moving? And I'd be freaking out trying to move. And finally, like reading up on sleep paralysis later and realizing that it was probably a chemical condition where I was not fully awake yet and my body hadn't granted control back over to, you know, this other part of my brain. But like trying to move and not being able to move until I finally like jerk out of bed screaming, like it's not fun.
Yeah.
No.
As an adult, I would say more than my memory of it happening as a kid or a teenager, like as an adult, I've had more of the scary recurring horror dreams, I think, which, you know, if just feels like the whole world is slowing down around you. Like, I think it's about time. Like, I've tried to think about this because I've also tried to be like, okay, how do I capture this feeling in film? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so scary. My nightmare is so scary. How do I capture, every time I wake up from a nightmare, I'm like, wait, how do I capture that sensation and put it in film? And I really think it has to do with like time feels different. Like, it moves way slower. So
it does. It's all in some dreams. It's almost like certain things are understood, things that wouldn't make sense in real life. In your dream, it's just like, yeah, of course it works that way.
Right. Cause you have all the context. Yeah. When you're talking about it slowing down, the first thing that comes to mind for me is that the dreams that I've had where it felt like things were slow were also dreams where I was under some sort of deadline or like stopwatch kind of situation. And it was only slow. Time was slow because that's what my brain needed to do to create the tension of the deadline. If that makes sense.
Yeah. The narrative.
So is that a common theme with some of the dreams that we're talking about? Was there like some anxiety about reaching a goal before time?
Probably. Like, I don't know. I don't remember specifically, but I always feel like I'm on a deadline. So it probably has something to do with that.
Maybe. let's see, anything scary happen in real life as an adult?
I think now I'm much more aware of the world than I was when I was younger. And the world is scary. The world feels like it keeps getting scarier every day. Yeah. So yeah, there's lots of real world anxieties that are on my mind a lot. Those, you know, those kinds of things. We don't need to bring down vibes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've shared this with Chris in the past that sometimes I wonder, is the world really getting worse, or am I just more of aware of it now because I'm getting older, because I'm more of an adult now?
I have that thought every single day. It's like, you know, has it always been this bad? And I'm just getting more, getting better at realizing it or noticing it. Yeah.
And I think also our algorithms have all changed to show us
that too. Well, not only that, but the existence of the algorithm at all, because, you know, 20 years ago, yeah, I had the internet, but I also didn't spend nearly as much time on social media. But also part of that's related to the promotional stuff I do for this podcast too, and reaching out and researching potential guests and contacting them, you know, doing all the conversational stuff. So I have a lot more reason to be online today than I did 20 years ago. Whereas 20 years ago, I'd have been out at the beach with friends kind of thing.
Yeah. Back in the day, we used to actually talk to each other and go outside.
The phone was just used to initiate the excursion of we're going to the park, or we're going to the beach, or we're going to ride bikes. That was it.
Yeah. So flipping that last question around, has there been a time in your adult life when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
I am very fortunate to say that I do feel that way. As long as I'm in my bubble, I can, when I'm like with real people, my real friends, my real family, I am very happy and fortunate to say that I do feel very safe. It's just anytime I look at what's going on outside on the news, any of that, that's when the anxiety returns.
Yeah, no, you get a point there. Cause it's like, I don't know if it's just me personally, but it's like almost a social anxiety thing. But hanging out with friends in real life, when you go to interact with people in reality and not online, your mind almost forces you to be social. Like, all right, you got to put on the social face now. But seconds after that, when you do just start talking with your friends, you're like, oh, wait, this is nice. I forgot what this is like. This is good.
Yeah. I think it's important we all get off our screens and spend real human to human time with people.
Absolutely.
So the next question is going to be over your entire life, and not just about horror, but any genre. What movie would you say you've watched more times than any other?
I think probably The Shining.
Okay. I had a feeling that was going to be it.
Yeah.
Normally we follow up and ask, would that then be your favorite movie, or is there something else you would pick to be your favorite?
I would say also, by the way, which we didn't talk about before, but I also love Eyes Wide Shut so much, and I try to watch it every Christmas.
Is it a Christmas movie?
It is.
It kind of is, isn't it?
It is a Christmas movie.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you like about that one?
Again, it's the world. Kubrick's ability to create atmosphere and like creeping tension, creeping anxiety. I think Eyes Wide Shut is so funny because it's just a guy having a total freak out about monogamy and his marriage. And he's like, you know, oh no, like the sexual escapades, like wanting sexual escapades, but then being so upset about it, and his wife expressing, you know, that she once had interest in another man, like fucking breaks his mind. Tom Cruise has really chosen some great roles over the years, I must say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, Nicole Kidman is amazing in that film, as she always is. So yeah, I don't know if Eyes Wide Shut is I've definitely seen The Shining more than I've seen Eyes Wide Shut. I guess I've gone throughout my life in phases where, like, again, when I was 15, I watched Donnie Darko a bunch of times. Also, when I was a teenager, I didn't mention it. I forgot to mention that Heathers was big on my rotation. So, like, if I were to count how many times did I watch Heathers as a teenager versus, like, how many times have I watched The Shining over the course of my life, I'm not really sure what would be the higher number. But anyway, I would say probably for the sake of this answer, we'll go with The Shining.
All right. Well, the reason for those two questions is that it's going to do one of two things. Either it's going to underscore something you've already talked about, or it's going to bring up something that we haven't talked about yet. We haven't talked about Heathers yet. Is there anything in particular you find interesting about that movie that we haven't talked about?
I think it's like, it's so fun and it's dark and comedic. It's a dark spin on, I mean, it's a comedic spin on like dark topics. And that's also about outsiders versus cliques.
Yeah.
And it's about the outsiders gaining power. But then what happens when your co-outsider is actually crazy, you know, when you have to face off against him. So very much identified with it as a teenager. Mm.
Do you see any common threads about what kind of horror you like? Cannibalism, occult, metaphysical, supernatural?
I mean, I like certain movies in all subgenres. I like all subgenres. Some subgenres I lean to more than others. Again, we talked a lot about 90s teen slashers. I love a good slasher. I do like my share of occult horror movies. Mm. Yeah, I think I wouldn't say I like every movie within a subgenre just because I like the subgenre, but in every subgenre, there is a movie that I like.
Mm. Okay. Okay. So this would be the part of the call where we talk about any common themes that have cropped up multiple points in the conversation, and then maybe talk about how those intersect with horror as a genre. It sounds like, at least to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like to me empowerment is really a strong issue for you.
Yeah.
Two things really, you know, main threads there of, you know, tragedy of safety being very close but just out of reach. And also, you know, new girl comes to a new space, and which you're just talking about here a minute ago about outsider empowerment. But there have been plenty of different ways that this has cropped up in the conversation. The Craft, 9/11, Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Urban Legend. It's also in The Shining, Suspiria, your own personal life of having moved from one location to another. So that really seems like the one thing that has cropped up more times than any other in the conversation. Do you think there's something you'd like to add to that, or do you think maybe tweak it a bit?
I do think that is part of the core part of my personality. Keep going.
Okay. Well, the follow-up question then normally is, why is that important to you? But I think in your case, we've already talked about that. So then the follow-up question would be, why horror? Because we could explore, for example, empowerment in multiple other genres, but for your case, horror is your preferred genre. Is there a reason that you think that maybe horror works particularly well for this as a topic? Or
yeah, I think that the horror genre allows you to explore your anxieties in a way that's safe. You're doing it from like your home. It's something you're exploring by yourself, but then it's a community activity also, where you can talk to other horror fans about that experience and that movie. I also think like The Final Girl is very influential to me, and certainly was influential, like as a, you know, young teenager was looking to all these final girls as like, if they can like, you know, survive the night and see all their friends die and still like take down the killer and be the survivor, like I can face another day in school tomorrow. So
yeah,
was very inspired by The Final Girl at various times throughout my life. Mm.
Yeah, I guess I'll go to school tomorrow. yeah. Cool. Well, I think we got a pretty good summary for what you get out of horror. Really, the last question is, you know, do you think there's anything that maybe you didn't get a chance to say early in the call, like you thought of something and then the conversation took a left turn?
I think I mostly talked about everything. I would say I think that there's something, I mentioned The Final Girl, something to the underdog mentality and then empowerment. I think all these things kind of connect. And I think that that's part of also being an indie filmmaker, is like believing that you'll finally get to the next thing and you'll have the success in making the movie and all the things. I think this all aligns with the idea of making movies too.
Life lessons in general, really.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, before we hit the closing, you want to remind everybody what you're currently working on?
Sure. So again, you can check out the films I directed, The Ranger and The Sacrifice Game, which are both on Shudder. I've also produced a couple movies like Anna Asensio's Most Beautiful Island, Larry Fessenden's Depraved, and Mickey Keating's Darling and Psychopaths, which are out in the world too. So check those out. And then The Last Temptation of Becky will be coming soon.
We're looking forward to that.
All of those things.
We're also going to get together with you offline to get some pictures and a bio, and we'll put together a bio page for you. So anybody out there looking for more information about Jen can go to hermixishappy.com, go to the episodes page, scroll down till you find her name, click on that. That'll take you to her bio, and we'll link to whatever it is that she'd like us to link to from there. So again, thank you for your time. Thank you to anybody out there listening. If you like what we're doing, share, subscribe, tell a friend, do all the fun stuff.